Spiritism and spiritualism. Spiritism being used in conjunction with this blighted bud symbol comes over to the top of 78. The decaying flower, the blighted bud, the gnarled oak, the ferocious beast, these are just symbols of the discords of disease, sin, and death, and are unnatural. They're the falsities of sense. They're the changing deflections of mortal mind. They're not the eternal realities of, and here's the capitalized term again, mind. No. The eternal realities of mind are therefore the unchanging reflections of mind. They can't decay. They don't get blighted. They aren't gnarled. They are not ferocious. And therefore, in the eternal realities of mind, there are no discords of disease, unnatural discords of disease, sin, and death. And therefore, these changeless reflections, these eternal realities of mind, going back in the chapter, these formations of spirit, these identities of soul, but in this paragraph, these eternal realities of mind, they're not wearing out life. They're not wearing out. Life is not wearing out for these realities, and 9, 6, and 7, and hastening to death. So the middle paragraph with its three references standing out there, you see, to spirit, that the supremacy, what we are concerned with then, what we're beginning to understand, is the supremacy of spirit. Spirit pervading all space. Spirit, on line 22, omnipresent. Supreme, omnipresent, pervading all space. Well then, indeed, spirit needs no material method for the transmission of messages. All spirit's messages are omnipresent, instantaneously available. Communion with spirit, with all spirit's formations, communion amongst all spirit's formations held in spirit is instantaneous and ever-present. No question of messages being transmitted through space, through time, through wires, electricity, wireless, radio, transmission, telecommunication, satellites, however rapid and working at the speed of light they seem to be. No, that's not omnipresence. But spirit is omnipresence, and therefore communion is instantaneous throughout the infinitude of spirit as it pervades all space. And none of this is tangible to matter. Spirit is not, on line 21, materially tangible, but it is certainly tangible to itself and to its formations. Spirit's formations are spiritually tangible. But spirit doesn't communicate through with man through electric material effects, therefore. If it did, its omnipotence would be lost. And this is how, through this marvelous sense of immediate communion, omnipresence, spirit omnipresent, spirit's formations, therefore, omnipresent, no possibility of departure from this omnipresence. This is it which blesses man. On line 28, but man cannot tell whence it cometh. That's Jesus, isn't it, talking to Nicodemus in John chapter 3, that the wind bloweth where it listeth, so you can't tell whence it cometh or whither it goeth. So is every one that is born of the Spirit. Why? Because it doesn't come. and therefore it doesn't go. How can omnipresence, that which pervades all space, come and go? And as we understand this, we are being born of spirit. And this is, of course, the new birth of spirit. By it the sick are healed, are reformed, and this is the effects of one universal God, the invisible good dwelling in eternal science. Spirit science. So, don't localize. Don't let us localize or temporalize the birth of the spiritual idea. Whatever is of spirit, whatever is of God, is born of omnipresence. It doesn't filter through some local channel, material, personal channel. Everything that is true, that is spiritual, is born of omnipresence. And that's you and me as man. As we come up onto 79, we see that this is indeed life, in which there is no death. Life, on line 4, no death. We see on line 9 that this is science, which goes over the whole ground and digs up every seed of error sowing. How does it go over the whole ground? Science goes over the whole ground because science is life. It goes over the whole ground when it shows the total nothingness of death. When science shows, because it is life, the nothingness of death, then every seed of error sowing is dug up. Because death is the fundamental, the opposite of science, of life. Science, the great general term, the great general conception, goes over the whole ground. And Christian science, on line 12, then removes these beliefs through the higher understanding of God. For Christian science rests on divine principle, not on material personalities, in its revelation of immortality. And this introduces the harmony of being now. It doesn't rest on material personalities, this revelation of immortality that is going on with you and me now. It rests on principle. And only then is it Christian science. Therefore you can't tell whence it cometh, because it doesn't come. It's already present in the omnipresence, this revelation of immortality. It doesn't come through him, through her, through you, through this, through that. It comes through omnipresence, which is itself. The revelation of immortality is omnipresence. So Christian science rests on divine principle. And this, as in the case of Jesus on line 17, casts out evil spirits or false beliefs. How? On line 18, through the mind that was in the Christ. Paul bade men, that's you and me, have the mind that Jesus had, that was in the Christ. Now, in the measure that you and I have the mind that was in the Christ, just as Jesus had the mind that was in the Christ, and therefore was Christ, therefore in that measure that you and I have the mind that was in the Christ, we are that same Christ. In and of that same Christ. That's principle. Back on line 14. What does that mean on line 19? It means that Jesus did his own work by the one Spirit. Does he explain that? Yes. He says, "My Father worketh hitherto, and I work." All there is to my work is the reflection of Spirit's work. Even more, all there is to my work is Spirit's own work. Spirit's work, that's my work. So he did his work by the one Spirit, and when all there is to your and my work is Spirit's work, then our mind is the Christ mind, and we are as much Christ as Jesus is Christ, or was Christ. So this mind of Christ, this is truly the scientific practitioner on line 23, in contrast to the unscientific practitioner, those material personalities back there on line 14 that are not resting on divine principle. Because these unscientific practitioners say, you are ill, your brain is overtaxed, you must rest. The mind of Christ doesn't say that. The mind of Christ says, Christian Science, all there is to you is Christian Science, and therefore you are resting on divine principle. Your brain can't be overtaxed because you have no brain but the mind of Christ. How can that be overtaxed? Your body is weak and must be strengthened. You have no body but the body of Christ. And so science, on line 27, objects to all that unscientific stuff and contends for the rights of intelligence, asserting that mind controls body and brain. You know how Paul speaks of Christ as the head and of humanity, man, as the body. All right, then mind controls body and brain. It controls the whole body concept of man and the head concept of Christ. The one and the all is all held within the infinitude of mind, and mind is controlling it, and this is science. So that what we are dealing with on line 29 is mind science. And this is teaching that mortals need not be weary in well-doing. What is that well-doing? It's doing our work by the one Spirit. That's well-doing. And there's nothing, no weariness in that. Going back to 78:6, there is no wearing out of that. Overtaxed, must weak, nervous prostration, wearing out life. No, not in well-doing. When our work is none other than Spirit's own work, the work of omnipresence instead of something filtering through, bottlenecking through, material personality, so that you say it's coming from here, it's coming from there, and it's now gone because he's passed on, and all that stuff. Nothing of the sort. The omnipresence of Spirit, Spirit not in its formations, but all formations held in Spirit, this is the key to it all. And the next terms on page 80, down in the middle, there are two references to the term science again, that on line 15, science dispels mystery. Science explains extraordinary phenomena, but science never removes phenomena from the domain of reason into the realm of mysticism. Science holds all phenomena in the domain of reason as it explains phenomena. So, this is a great thing about science. Science unqualified. Science dispels mystery and explains. So, how does it explain? Well, it begins to explain on line 19, doesn't it? It should not seem mysterious, starting to dispel mystery, that mind without the aid of hands can move a table, when we already know that it is mind power which moves both table and hand. The mystery goes out when we see that on line 24, all there is to it is the control of mortal mind over its substratum called matter. Substratum, like the subconscious, the surface conscious and the under the surface conscious, mortal mind and its substratum, matter. That a very useful teaching there regarding the relationship of mortal mind and matter in this particular context. Won't always be explained like that, but in this particular context, mortal mind, the substratum of mortal mind is matter. And it is mortal mind which convulses, produces these involuntary movements in its substratum, matter. But these movements of the substratum matter arise, on line 26, from the volition of human belief. They're really the voluntary will. They are... mortal mind itself is responsible for them. And we don't really have to submit to these involuntary convulsions of matter. We only have to understand, reverse all this, and find that mind is in total control of itself for the involuntary convulsions as well as the volition of human will to disappear in the face of mind itself, immortal mind. Because mortal mind produces, on line 28, table tipping. That's the involuntary action, as well as table setting. Well, that, of course, is quite voluntary. But it's mortal mind that does both. Although mysticism and so on would say that it is being done through the mediumship of spirits and electricity. But in belief, on line 31, mind and matter cooperate visibly, that's on the surface, the top stratum, and invisibly, that's the substratum. Mind and matter are in cooperation both on the top stratum and on the underneath stratum, hence that matter is intelligent. Well, we've got to come to the reverse of all this, which is on line 5, namely, mind, capital M, science, which is finding, on line 6, the science of being. Because once this mind science becomes to us the science of being, then all belief in spiritualistic mediumship, one thing filtering, bottlenecking through another thing in order to get somewhere else, vanishes. We are in the realm of mind science and the science of being. And we come to this quite startling reference to capitalized terms on line 15. We get these three terms used in a way as never before, never again, are they used in the textbook. Extraordinary, wonderful statement that life, love, truth is the only proof of immortality. That order, life, love, truth. Not life, truth, love, but life, love, truth, and no and there. Usually these terms are given life, truth, and love are. Not in this instance. Life, love, truth is. It's one thing, not three things. Three component aspects of one thing, which is immortality itself. It's mediumship. A false sense of mediumship that's being dispelled. See, if we go back to the term spirit, when we realize that all that is going on is spirit communing with itself, spirit through itself, spirit. How many concepts have we got there? Spirit communing with spirit through spirit. It's all spirit. But we have a threefold concept there. And in order fully to dispose of the belief in mediumship, we have to consider spirit coming through to this mind science, this science of being, in terms of these three terms, life, love, truth, not as three things, but as one thing. Life, forever in communion with itself, truth, through itself, love. Love is the only possible medium of communication. What is it that makes you and I individually, you and me individually, as life, communicate, love to communicate with each other collectively, with our world collectively? Truth, it's love. It's universal love that causes, or is the medium, the true medium through which the individual communes with the collective. We commune with each other because we love. And here lies immortality, and is the only proof of immortality. And that's God. Life, love, truth is God. And man in the likeness of God on line 17, man in the likeness of life, love, truth, as revealed in science, so that this is science, can't help being immortal. The spiritually involuntary, he cannot help being immortal. It's spontaneous. It's inevitable. It's consequential. So this God, God's immortality reflected in man's immortality, we're getting on line 23 to the producing, governing, divine principle. Because although the grass seems to wither and the flower to fade, and you give to the worms the body called man, yet the producing, governing, divine principle lives on in the case of man, as in the case of numbers, music, and so on, despite the evidence of the senses. We're looking at the harmony of science, where everything is jointed to everything else in science, because we are understanding, in line 28, the principle of science. The principle of science where man's immortality depends upon the immortality of God good, and follows as a necessary consequence of the immortality of good. Man, the likeness of life, love, truth, which is the only proof of immortality, and therefore man is spontaneously, can't help being immortal. now this grass withering and flower fading and so on, as the evidence of the senses. When the grass withers, more grass comes along. When the flower fades, more flowers come to take its place. When the worms have the body called man, that's okay, because there's more men coming along to take the place of that one, so we let those pass on, and then more come and take their place, and then those pass on, and then more come along and take their place, and so the round of mortality goes on and on and on. I don't think Jesus thought too much of that. I don't think in the case of Jesus that the worms had the body called man. We pick some roses in the garden, we bring them in, and after a little while they fade and we don't mind a bit. We throw them on the dust heap because we can go down into the garden and pick more roses. And when those are faded, we can go down and pick more roses. But is this solving the problem of being? Certainly not in the way Jesus solved it. The way Jesus solved it is that the flower didn't fade. The worms did not have the body called man. What then is the producing, governing, divine principle itself? It's the principle of the fact that there are not one flower fading and another one taking its place. It's the principle of the fact that there is only one of anything and everything, and that one is infinite. There's only one of anything, but that one is infinite, and therefore it doesn't fade. And therein lies its immortality. And this is the principle of science. The principle of the science of man's immortality, which is the reflection of God's immortality. As we come up to the top of 82, a topic begins to appear, which is an enormous topic in this chapter, and it is that of reading thoughts. You see it at the top of 82 there. There are no capitalized terms down this page, but the page is dealing very much with consciousness. Consciousness in its conscious, with its conscious and unconscious planes of consciousness. We come down the whole of that 82 and up to the top of 83, where this begins to become a little more definite, because the capitalized terms are coming back now, and we have to distinguish between whether it is, go to the bottom of 82, in this world of sin and sensuality hastening to a greater development of power, whether it is the human mind on the one hand or the divine mind on the other which is flowing in, influencing one. Because when divine mind is influencing, this is what the prophets of Jehovah were experiencing, but when the human mind is the influence, then this is to do with the worshippers of Baal, line 3. The one is the work of wisdom, that's when divine mind is the influence, and the other is artifice and delusion, that is when the human mind, Baalism, is at work. So this beautiful paragraph starting line 6, where science, term science, only can explain. Science is that which explains extraordinary phenomena, dispels mystery, and now science only can explain the incredible good and the incredible evil elements now coming to the surface. The one seeming to come from the depths of the so-called unconscious human mind, and the other coming from the depths of divine mind itself. Science only can explain both. I wonder why that is. Because to science there aren't two. One is but the supposititious, the greatest wrong is but the supposititious, opposite of the highest right, the incredible good, the incredible evil coming to the surface is but the supposititious opposite of the incredible good elements now coming to the surface. And mortals must find refuge in truth in order to escape the error of this belief in incredible evil coming to the surface. They must find refuge in truth as the source of everything that comes to the surface. In understanding, on line 10, instead of in blind belief, then they are building on truth, capital T, line 11, and not building on error. It's the human mind versus, it's the divine mind versus the human mind, in the same way that Christian Science is versus spiritualism, but that means that there aren't really two, and the one is but the supposititious opposite of the other. So as we come down to line 12, two references to the term science on line 12. Science dealing with the proposition of miracles, therefore taking issue with popular religions where alone miracles obtain. Miracle is to religion as, on line 13, the scientific manifestation of power coming from the divine nature is to science. The one is supernatural, the other is natural. Science being an explication of nature. So what is all this miracle business? It is the belief that the universe is governed in general by material laws, and then you get a miracle. Occasionally, spirit sets aside these laws. This belief belittles omnipotent wisdom and gives to matter the precedence over spirit. Spirit doesn't occasionally set aside these material laws. To spirit, they are wholly and forever set aside. They're non-existent in spirit. And therefore the scientific manifestation of power is constant. It is a thing of science and not of mystical religion. Now it is essential, as we come down to the bottom paragraph, to distinguish between the one and the other. Although there are not in fact two, we must distinguish between the one concept and the other. Because on line 23, between Christian Science and all forms of superstition, there is this great impassable gulf. It brings us to right into this subject of mortal mind reading on the one hand, which is superstition, and immortal mind reading on the other, which is Christian Science. What is immortal mind reading? It is a revelation of divine purpose through spiritual understanding, by which man gains the divine principle and explanation of all things. Think of that. Gaining the divine principle and explanation, not of some things, but of all things, through what is meant by immortal mind, capital M, reading. Because, line 29, mortal mind reading and immortal mind reading are distinctly opposite standpoints from which cause and effect are interpreted. Same thing, same cause and same effect, read it through mortal mind reading and it's one thing. Read it through immortal mind reading and it's the opposite. But what you're doing, what you're dealing with, is exactly the same thing, the same cause and effect. So as we come over to 84, we see that what we are being led to is the mind of the prophet. This wonderful couple of pages now really dealing with what constitutes the mind of the prophet. Down on line 8, you see the prophet is sufficiently advanced in science, to be in harmony with the truth of being, not going to be or used to be, but the truth of being. And therefore, when you and I are likewise advanced in science, then we become, on line 9, seers, not only seers, but also foreseers, that is, prophets, involuntarily. Can't help it. Just like that reference where a man can't help, in the likeness of God, he can't help being immortal. It's entirely involuntarily. Why is that so? Because we are controlled by the one Spirit, on line 10. Everything coming from within the infinitude of Spirit, the very opposite of being controlled by the psychological unconscious, that is, by demon spirits or demigods and so on. See, the divine mind, on line 11, the ever-present divine mind knows the past, the present, and the future. This spirit which is mind, and this mind which is spirit, know the one mind, the one spirit, knows the past, the present, and the future, and of course thought which is in rapport with this mind, which is mind's own thought. How could it not be in rapport? How could mind's thought not be in rapport with mind? It knows the past, the present, and the future. But it is mind that knows it. And this is being acquainted, on line 14, with the science of being, where we commune more largely with the divine mind. This mind which knows the past, the present, and the future, as we commune more largely with this divine mind, then we foresee and foretell events which concern the universal welfare. We are divinely inspired and reach the range of fetterless mind. Mind unbounded, fetterless, in line 21. Mind infinite. Mind having sight and hearing and locomotion, but not dependent on matter for it, not dependent on ear, eye, muscles, bones. And this is mind science, where we discern man's nature and existence and this beautiful true conception of being. Well, at the bottom of that page, this paragraph, at the bottom of 84, it's the knowledge, the correct knowledge of spirit that concerns us. What all this amounts to is the correct knowledge, really, that spirit is not in spirit's formations, but that all spirit's formations are held in spirit. This correct knowledge comes from divine principle. must do if it's correct knowledge. It must come from divine principle. It is learned through Christ and Christian Science. If this science has been thoroughly learned, what science? This Christian Science? No. It is learned through Christ and Christian Science. This science that is to be thoroughly learned is learned through Christ and Christian Science. It's the two together that constitute the science. Christ is the great idea of the one, the total manifestation, and Christian Science is the infinite constitution of everything that makes up that one. And the two are one, and that one is science. And so it is that Christ and Christian Science, as science, constituting science, that must be thoroughly learned and properly digested, and then we can know the truth more accurately than the astronomer can read the stars or calculate an eclipse. And what it amounts to, what does it amount to on line 1, 85-1? Mind reading, the opposite of clairvoyance. It is reading the stars, but not as an astronomer, not as an astrologer, but it is reading the record that is written of reality in the universe and as the universe. Reading mind, mind reading, reading the content of mind with a capital M as the very opposite of mortal mind reading, clairvoyance, psychiatry, and delving hypnotically or through drugs into the so-called unconscious. Or through astrology or whatever it is. This mind reading is the opposite of clairvoyance. The illumination of the spiritual understanding, that's what it is. It's the demonstration, this mind reading, of the capacity, the infinite capacity of soul, this infinitely capacious mind which is soul. Mind is seen to hold the infinite record of its own being within itself because it is soul, this infinite capacious withinness of soul. Now all this is soul sense coming, which comes to us at this moment. All this that we're seeing, thinking, entertaining as idea is soul sense. Soul's sense of itself, of reality. And it comes to the human mind that otherwise is influencing, as all that Baal worship stuff, it comes to the human mind when the human mind yields to the divine mind, that is to say, when it yields to the prophet standpoint, the prophets of Jehovah, and so on. Incredible statement that, the simplicity and yet the profundity of it, that this soul sense comes to the human mind when the human mind yields to the divine mind, when it is seen that there aren't two, but only one. And the human mind concept is swallowed up in the divine mind reality. And now we've got true mind reading. And we reach, on line 9, the perfect science of healing. The perfect science of healing. When you are able to read the human mind after this manner, because the human mind has yielded to the divine mind and is no longer believed to be a reality. Therefore you are truly, from the divine mind standpoint, reading the human mind and discerning the error. It just throws the error up into consciousness that you would destroy. What is it that's at work on line 14? Christ. It's all the work of Christ. Come see a man that told me all things that ever I did. Is not this the Christ? And so as we come down now 85, you see Jesus reading their thoughts and rebuking the hypocrites. Ye hypocrites. Hypocrite is that which wears a mask. Ye hypocrites, ye can discern the face of the sky, but can ye not discern the signs of the time? You can do all this mortal mind reading, but can ye not understand what is meant by immortal mind reading? See, as soon as we get, as soon as mortal mind reading yields to immortal mind reading, the mask is off the face of the sky. The mask is off. There's no hypocrisy. And we see and read what is the fact of being, what is held and recorded as reality in divine mind. No capitalized terms down page 86. Very useful references, though, to matter, these negatives, matter and mortal mind, on line 5. On line 13, mortals evolve images of thought. And all these funny goings on that seem so mysterious to mortal mind are, line 19, either feats by tricksters or, now science is going to explain it, they're not really feats. Well, they can be feats by tricksters, but they are images and sounds. They can be images and sounds evolved involuntarily by mortal mind. And not a bit what belief says they are. Because on line 29, mortal mind sees what it believes as certainly as it believes what it sees, and what it feels, hears, and sees is its own thoughts. Now this is the scientific explanation of all these extraordinary phenomena and mysterious, apparently mysterious, goings on. Science explains them quite logically and reasonably, so that 87 capitalized terms in the middle paragraph, it's all science, enabling one to read the human mind, but not as a clairvoyant, enabling one to heal through mind, but not as a mesmerist. Reading the human mind, because the only mind there really is the divine mind. Lovely paragraph there, symbolized by the mine on line 19, which doesn't know about the emeralds within its rocks, and so on, because, and line 23, don't suppose that any mental concept is gone because you do not think of it. The mind knows naught of the emeralds. Don't suppose that any mental concept is gone because you do not think of it. The true concept is never lost. It's sunk. Not the true concept. The true concept lives in divine mind. But these memories and so on, they sink back into what psychiatry calls the unconscious, and there the clairvoyant and the mortal mind reader brings them up to the surface again, and the psychiatrist. The text is working up, really, to page 88, line 9, that paragraph. It begins now to resolve the whole issue, because it shows that, or it asks the question, how are veritable ideas to be distinguished from illusions? By learning the origin of each. We must get to what is origin. Ideas are emanations from the divine mind. Like that Jehovah, the prophets of Jehovah, it was the divine mind that was influencing them. Whereas thoughts, illusions, that is to say, proceeding from the brain or from matter, are coming from supposedly mortal mind. All right, now, we perhaps could say to the text now. Now, text, could you give me an instance? What is a divine idea emanating from the divine mind? Oh, yes, says the text. I tell you on line 18, to love one's neighbor as oneself, that's a divine idea and therefore is emanating from divine mind. Now the opposite of that is when you excite on line 20 the organ of veneration and exciting this and exciting that and adoration one moment, blasphemy the next. That is illusion coming from mortal mind. Now, for the first time, I think, in the chapter, as we come down to 24, we see that what we are being taught about now is Christianity. Of course it is. It's Christianity to love one's neighbor as oneself. Previous term is mind. The mind of Christianity is one mind. See, to love one's neighbor as oneself doesn't involve two minds, one here and another there. One's neighbor is oneself. And therefore the two are one, and the mind of that one is divine mind, and this is Christianity. This is relationship in Christianity. At the bottom of that page, it deals with what we call in the margin, trance-speaking illusion. All right, well, the counter to that is clearly when mind speaks ideas. Trance-speaking illusion. Mind speaks ideas. And so as we commune with each other, love one's neighbor as oneself, mind's neighbor is mind's own self. And this is really Christianity. And the eloquence that comes from that echoes the strains of truth and love, not as two things, me here, my neighbor there. Mind, the mind of Christianity, is truth and love, which is not two things but one thing, two aspects of the same thing, truth and love. And oneself are not separate minds, seeking to come into relationship with each other in Christianity. But all relationships in Christianity are the activity of one mind, the mind which is truth and love. The wholeness of truth in Christianity, the wholeness of us all as man, embraced within and showing forth universal love. So, one loves one's neighbor as the self of that one. And then we have the illustration of the medium at the bottom of 88, who is eloquent as long as she believes that a departed spirit is speaking through her, but mute when she believes she has to do the speaking herself. Well, science explains. Science explains that there's nothing mysterious about this, that it is nothing to do with departed spirits, but that in the one instance the beliefs of mortal mind are loosed, that's 88 line 3, and in the other instance mortal mind's former limits return. Well, that's the scientific explanation. But now line 18, mind, with a capital M, possesses of itself all beauty and poetry and the power of expressing them. Notice in this paragraph the order of the capitalized terms mind, line 18, spirit, line 20, and soul, 23. Mind, spirit, soul. The familiar, straightforward order, mind, spirit, soul. And spirit, God, is heard when the senses are silent. It's spirit that we hear when the senses are silent. Well, of course, because if mind possesses of itself all beauty and poetry and so on, then certainly we're all capable of more than we do. Now, why then are we capable? Because the influence or action of soul confers a freedom. It's this infinite capacity that we found with the term soul. Infinitely capable, soul infinitely capacious, holding its own expression infinitely within itself and expressing itself. So that confers freedom, true freedom, not like the medium at the top of the page, which is all a matter of the beliefs of mortal mind, but true freedom. But that is it which explains the phenomena of improvisation and the fervor of untutored lips. Well, as we come down to the bottom of 89, and we see that the tree is not really the author of itself, that sound is not the originator of music, and man is not the father of man, and the margin heading there is divine origination, then, as we turn over, we see that how it is that Jesus on the shores of Galilee, that's lines 3 and 4, multiplied the loaves and the fishes. Those wonderful shores of Galilee. Galilee, the same word as Gilgal, meaning circle, where everything is stemming from an infinite source and returning to that infinite source, undiminished. So that in that case, going back to 89:32, seed is not necessary to produce wheat, and wheat to produce flour, or one animal to originate another. Everything is idea. Infinite ideas, the ideas of infinite, infinite mind. I mean, if supposing there were 5 2 and 2 is 4s on the shores of Galilee, and a few small 3 times 3 are 9s on the shores of Galilee, well, really, there's only 1 2 and 2 is 4, and only 1 3 times 3 are 9, but of course that one is infinite, and it's impossible to diminish it because it's of the nature of idea, and the understanding of that therefore feeds the multitude. but on the shores of Galilee. And therefore it is, marginal heading, line 9, that mind is substance. Mind sustains the motion and position not only of the earth on line 7 and 8, but certainly the motion and positions of the total universe. On the other hand, as you come down to line 20, opium and hashish eaters, and of course today it would undoubtedly be something like LSD, cannabis addicts who penetrate through the use of the drug deep into the unconscious. They mentally travel far and work wonders. That is to say, they go off on their trips, yet their bodies stay in one place, and this shows what mortal mentality and knowledge are. The answer lies in the infinite depths of infinite mind, where all experience originates and where there is infinite expression and infinite freedom of movement, and so on. Well, line 28, the term is spirit. It is essential to understand that this whole proposition is in fact spirit. The understanding and recognition of spirit, which must finally come, and therefore will finally come. And the coming of it is, as we apprehend on line 30, divine principle, and so solve the mysteries of being. End of recording on this side. Will you please now turn to the second tape on Christian Science versus Spiritualism?